Ravens Game Plan on WBAL News Radio 1090.
Hatred is a very strong word, but it seems fitting. But, you know, it's a lot of respect going there between, because the two teams are so similar. But we plan on displaying, you know, our thoughts of each other come Thursday.
That is Terrell Suggs on the Steelers. No one says it quite like Terrell Suggs. Brent Q back with you here on WBAL News Radio 1090. We're joined now from behind the steel curtain, Steelers reporter Neil Coulong. Neil, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing pretty well. How did the Steelers look in their 30-27 win over Cleveland last Sunday?
There was a lot of good and a lot of bad. I mean, honestly, watching it back again, I think that the final score was probably the most indicative of both of these teams, just in the sense that Cleveland's probably better than we think that they are, and Pittsburgh has some ways to go, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. I think that was kind of expected. Seeing the way that each of them played in their respective halves of dominance, I don't necessarily think that we're going to see a whole lot of that from either team. And whether that's just kind of a fluky week one thing, or really that, you know, both teams will have, you know, just atrocious gaps in defensive ability, I don't know. But Cleveland must have missed 10 tackles in the first half, and Pittsburgh couldn't stop water from running uphill in the second. So I'm not sure if that's going to be a trend for either team this year, but as far as Pittsburgh is concerned, the young defense kind of showed itself. The lack of cohesion that you probably could have expected, considering how many, you know, new guys they had in there. So I think a close competitive game is kind of what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a little more low scoring, but sloppiness kind of leads to big games. So there you have it.
Is it one of those cases where Dick LeBeau has to kind of almost, I won't say dumb down, but simplify his complex defense to get the defense on the same page to play more aggressively?
Well, it's just the thing with him. He doesn't want to do that. He won't do that, even if it means they're going to take their lumps. And particularly, look at a guy like Cam Thomas. From my opinion, he was thrown around for the better part of that game, and he probably should have had, you know, matchups that at least he could fight even with. But he lost a lot of his one-on-ones. He wasn't really there, and at the same time, that doesn't really help. A veteran like Lawrence Simmons, who definitely didn't play his best game either, but you've got the rookie out there in Ryan Shazier as well, and they picked on him in their it wasn't exactly a zone scheme, but they really shot their backside guard out to pick him up quickly. They did a great job of that and took him out of a large majority of the runs that they really gained yards on. So as far as getting the defensive lineman to help cover up some of those guys and you know, try to get the linebackers to stay free, I don't know how necessarily complicated that is, but the scheme won't change. They'll keep it the way it is, like they always have. And I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of nervous Steelers fans as far as what this defense is going to do. And you know, I don't think we're going to know necessarily even on Thursday. I think we're going to be talking about this come November, and we'll have to see where they are then.
And looking at the defensive secondary, obviously there were some plays that were given up by them. Obviously, we're not looking at, familiar faces like Ryan Clark any longer. You know, give us a preview or what went on as far as that game, and what do we have to look forward to in this game?
Really, the challenge with playing defense in today's NFL is you know, probably more who to blame than who to praise with any kind of success. If you have receivers that can run, you know, your 12-yard in patterns in 2 seconds, and you have a quarterback that knows exactly where to throw the ball, and he's in a rhythm, he can drop back and throw, there's not a whole lot of defense that you can really play to stop that. In the Steelers' scheme, it's largely designed to tackle the catch. You know, the idea is get the quarterback confused with what's going on at the line of scrimmage, have him come down and attack and make him, you know, vulnerable to either a sack or a, you know, a bad throw. And eventually, you know, the tides will turn. You'll get that interception. You'll get that drive stalling sack. But plain and simple, that theory that I just posted, it hasn't happened over the last 3 years. And we saw that in the second half. It was the same thing. The mentality of tackling the catch doesn't work when your quarterback is now capable of completing 7 straight passes to a variety of different receivers. And that's exactly what Brian Hoyer did. You know, there used to be a time, you guys probably remember this pretty well, where backup quarterbacks or you know, career backups couldn't come in and just shred a defense. Yet that seems to happen all the time in the NFL today, unless you're in Oakland. But other than that, Pittsburgh's faced, you know, probably overall too many mediocre quarterbacks who have had a fair amount of success, and they haven't made them pay for it. So it's as far as Baltimore is concerned, the fact they didn't get any sacks against Cincinnati, I think was interesting. I'm not even sure the last time I ever heard of the Ravens not getting a sack in a game, but the pressure didn't seem to be too bad. But it goes to show again, even with a quarterback like Andy Dalton, it's generally referred to as fairly mediocre, he can get hot and complete 13 to 16 over two quarters and lead to 17 points. You know, he's able to do things like that. And there are more and more passers and more receivers that can really help an offense do that. So to be honest with you, I don't know how they play defense in the NFL anymore. I don't know what we're going to see overall this season, but we definitely saw a lot of big scoring.
You know, it's crazy because I think part of what you're saying and what I see as well, you know, I think coordinators are realizing, you know, just the days of sitting back in the pocket and allowing guys just to come and tee off on them, you know, those days are long gone. I definitely know one of the things that Andy Dalton, you know, had at his disposal was, you know, the use of Giovanni Bernard and getting rid of the ball very quickly. They were able to get rid of the ball quickly as to their tight ends as well. So I think the matchup issues, you know, by the time you do get back to at least thinking you're going to put pressure on Andy Dalton, the ball is already gone. But even in that regards, what about Ben Roethlisberger? Because we did see where, you know, he was pressured a lot and he did have his fair share of sacks. You know, how did it work out for him as far as trying to, you know, obviously you win a game on a field goal. So you've done something right. But give us the assessment as far as offensively.
I think Ben looked probably as good in the first half as he ever has. He was very fluid in his decision making. He threw good passes. He really put some velocity on the ball, and he spread it around. I mean, it definitely helps when you have great open field runners like Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, and your scheme is really designed to not so much like a pure spread offense, but they're widening it after the snap, and they're running, you know, kind of comeback routes with athletic players like Brown and Bell and getting them the ball in space. They're setting up their blocking down the field, and with that, these guys can, you know, turn on a dime and cut up field to make something happen. That's really what we saw in the first half, and I don't know how much of that is necessarily, you know, the quarterback's physical prowess as much as the mental. You know, he checked out of a lot of different things. He moved things around a lot in the offense, and it worked very well. The problem was Cleveland adjusted, and the Steelers' offensive line just kind of ran out of gas. I mean, I honestly thought that right tackle Marcus Gilbert must have been injured in the second half. I mean, he got beat on pretty bad. And things like that, that's going to worry you when you're going to Baltimore in a short week. That's probably something they're going to pick up on. That's something they're going to exploit. So you really have to look at this again as another game in which Ben's, you know, mental acumen needs to be 110% because he's just simply not going to get every down that he's afforded just to make something happen. They're not going to give him that opportunity. They're going to put him on the ground if he's there too long, and even times he's not there very long, they're going to put him on the ground. So it's definitely going to be a challenge from that end, but, you know, he's done it before with, you know, very mediocre pedestrian numbers. That's a lot of what you get in this game. It's a credit to, you know, two defenses that usually play at a very high level, and they can, you know, pound with each other down low and try to keep it close and, you know, take it at the end. And Ben does that very well. And now we're seeing Flacco do it too. So it's going to be a battle.
Seems as though that the receiving core has been retooled. Out goes Emmanuel Sanders. He's off in Denver, you know, feeling the love as far as Peyton Manning is concerned. Antonio Brown is obviously the workhorse. He had the five catches for 116 yards, but lo and behold, you have another guy, you know, who had a really good game in Marcus Wheaton with his six catches, 97 yards with a 16.2 yard per catch. You know, talk about just his play and how he's been able to progress in his second year.
What's really interesting is for a game that really wasn't viewed all that optimistically by Steelers fans, it was one in which you could have given the game ball to any one of probably four different offensive players. And in my opinion, I probably just for what he had to overcome and for what he had to do to get on the field itself, I would have given it to Wheaton. I thought Wheaton looked phenomenal, you know, and not to push this too far. I don't want to, you know, overhype him any more than I probably already have, but I didn't see Emmanuel Sanders play the way Wheaton did on Sunday. I've yet to see that from him. And I'm not trying to knock Emmanuel Sanders. It's just Wheaton is probably a better athlete. He's quicker off the line. He's not, you know, not that Sanders is big, but Wheaton is pretty small as well. I didn't even think he was going to be a split end long term. He looked more like the Z receiver that Brown is, or maybe even move him to the slot. But he can work outside the numbers. He did very well. He had seven targets. He caught six of them. And on the seventh, he was open. He beat the guy deep down the sideline, and the throw was a bit off. So Emmanuel Sanders was a guy who caught somewhere around 50% of his targets last year. Wheaton grabbed 6 of 7 right off the bat, and that was, you know, in a game where, you know, they basically fell apart in the first half or the second half. He made the 2 catches on the game-winning drive, you know, and the second one was really an audible from Ben, who basically just said, look, you know what, here, I see a safety that's probably coming down on you. Run a post. I'm going to get you the ball. Threw it to him, got it, you know, square in his gut, made the catch, rolled to the ground, and set up the game-winning field goal. And that's something that, to be honest, we haven't seen from a Steelers second receiver, and I don't know how long. He in my opinion, was the story of the game. I thought he played very well, and I think we can probably expect some pretty good things from him this year.
Neil Coulong from Behind the Steel Curtain is with us right now. And, Neil, have any Steelers commented publicly on the Ray Rice situation?
I believe it was Tuesday after practice when the players were there. Troy Polamalu had made mention of the fact that, at least in conversation about Roger Goodell and the power that the NFL commissioner has, making mention that the Steelers were one team out of 32 in the league that did not vote for the CBA because of that clause. And not to say that that's right or wrong today, but this was really the main concern as a team in 2011. William Gay had spoken out, the nickel cornerback for the Steelers, because his family had it suffered that horrible violence. His mother was killed in a situation like that. He's long been an advocate for groups against that, working against that, offering support, whatever it is that they're doing. It wasn't, and this is kind of the unfortunate part about the rivalry. You hear a lot of fans going back and forth, somehow trying to blame, you know, the Baltimore Ravens players for this. It's certainly not their fault in any way, and they didn't, you know, endorse it, didn't support it.
Sure.
But it was more a message of, This stuff is real, and this is something within the league that we need to talk about as players. And I think Will Gay really, you know, stood on the pedestal and you know, announced that to everybody, and a lot of people took notice. It was a big story, and I think it was a very poignant and you know, pithy thing to say right now in wake of everything that's gone on. It's kind of a crazy time, yet we've got a football game, and it's hard to kind of balance the two together, but, you know, at least there's a voice of reason in there that says, you know, we can come together to try to do something about this for the future and not have to see it again.
Neil Coulong from Behind the Steel Curtain. Neil, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, thank you. You guys have a good one.